This is Second Look. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director. I'm grateful for your company once again on this Sunday afternoon. I hope you'll stick around for the next half hour because I think you'll enjoy today's show. Second Look is celebrating 3 years on the air. Our first show was February 6th, 2015. Hard to believe. So for a special treat, we're going to revisit our Women of Interest series from last summer. That series profiled just a few of the women in our region doing things a little differently, women with unique perspectives, and like many other women, changing the lives of people around them in positive ways. The first installment of that series began with this profile by WMRA's Sefe Imakpai. St. Mark Lutheran Church in Charlottesville welcomed a new pastor last May. Victoria Parvin is only the second female pastor to serve the church. And as Sefe reports, her hope is that she won't be the last.
It's Sunday morning and service is just beginning.
We speak of accepting, we speak of respecting.
Victoria Parvin is pastor here at St. Mark Lutheran.
This is a very open congregation, I would say. You know, they are reconciling in Christ. They are openly saying that what holds us together is more powerful than what separates us.
What might separate Parvin from the average member of the congregation here is a lot. Born in the 70s in communist Hungary, Parvin's path to religion was neither easy nor conventional.
One of my grandmother would take me to church, especially at Christmas. We would sneak out and go to the local church at midnight. It was actually a midnight mass.
Parvin says though her grandmother was the first to introduce her to faith, it was her non-religious father who unwittingly led her to the church with a Bible.
My father had a lot of books, and I just happened to find it and read it. Something was very powerful about it, and I reached out and started to ask people about God. My parents would say, well, some people believe in God. And I would say, does God exist? And they would say, well, for some people.
Parvin soon became immersed in the church, participating in youth programs, church camps, and Sunday school. She called it an exciting time.
It was almost feeling like being rebellious by sneaking out and not telling to everyone that I'm going on Sunday morning to a Sunday school in the Catholic Church and in the Lutheran Church.
But simmering under the surface was a call to something greater.
It is a feeling of something different than you ever heard before or experienced before.
Parvin enrolled in seminary school and embarked on the path to becoming the pastor she is today.
I think the biggest step was just to finding a woman role model who would say to me, you know, have you thought about being a pastor? It is just something that if you don't have a role model around you, you never even try to imagine it or come up with the idea yourself.
But the path, she says, wasn't always easy.
When I first time applied to the seminary in Hungary, Budapest, I remember they advertised in the school as we prefer men. My bishop said to me, I'm not sure how long you would have to wait because congregations are not prepared, most of them, for female ministers. So they are asking me for male ministers. So what can I do? And that really made me realize, well, education is not enough. Having the call is not enough. There's more fights that had to be done.
And fight she would. Parvin would eventually land her first role as an intern at a church in upstate New York, followed by two congregations in southern Illinois. As the first female pastor there, she recalls the difficulty in her sense of isolation.
I felt really alone, and people would say, you don't look like a pastor, which I understood what they meant was I wasn't a man. I had to kind of push and prove myself. I used to wear my collar everywhere so that I would be identified.
Now in Charlottesville, Parvin is the second female pastor St. Mark Lutheran has seen.
I find her to be very dedicated, and her faith is very strong, and she has a good way of presenting her faith to others.
Congregation member and usher Tom Heckmanzik has been with the church for the better part of 17 years and praises Parvin for bringing her own unique set of gifts and skills to the table.
I think she's very inclusive. She wants to be a part of this community and make sure we stay involved and dedicated to the community as well as the church here itself.
Parvin says she hopes to set an example for the next generation of pastors, male and female alike, and views her role as a grand responsibility.
I see that is a very important opportunity. God is always surprising us with new things. And I see those struggles that we have, especially this time that we are separated, as not only challenges but opportunities to prove our faith and to show who we are.
For WMRA News, I'm Sefe Amokpai.
And by the way, speaking of women of interest, Sefe has moved from the Charlottesville area on to new adventures in Los Angeles, California, and we wish her the best. Our second installment of the series is a political success story. Dina Reed's four-year term on Harrisonburg's city council began last year. She says she never planned to run for office, but now she's the mayor. Christopher Clymer-Kurtz has her profile.
When Harrisonburg native Dina Reed won her race for city council, which subsequently chose her to be mayor, she had dubbed herself an everyday leader for everyday people.
I mean, I'm not a wealthy person. I live in the same community that I grew up in. You know, I'm not a lawyer I'm a program director for an after-school program, right? And I'm your mayor.
Tuesday, July 11, 2017, city council meeting to order. Roll call, please, Mary Hope.
Mayor Reed.
Here.
But each and every day is product and part of history, as she full well knows.
I was surrounded, and I always talk about women who kind of had their hands on me when I was growing up. And that would be my mom, of course, and my grandmother and my aunt. My grandmother had these friends, Miss Wilhelmina Johnson, Miss Barbara Blakey, who was my high school teacher. And those women kept their hands on me as I was growing up, but they also were community activists, and community service was at their core. All of them are with me in this moment because I'm standing on their shoulders.
After she graduated from Harrisonburg High School, Reed studied for a couple years at Radford University, then spent a couple decades living and working in business in Charlottesville and then Richmond. She returned to Harrisonburg to care for her aging grandmother and substitute taught in the city schools. She has served with a variety of community organizations and is now the program director for an after-school program called On the Road Collaborative. Reed said that when she found herself working with young girls of color, she realized that she was embodying the women who shaped her.
And I think that was a defining moment that I was actually being the mentor to young girls the way Miss Wilhelmina and Miss Blakey were being mentors to me. That I'm like, oh, wow. Now I'm doing this. You know, now I'm them. And then, of course, I decided to run for office, which was totally different.
Had you ever anticipated doing that?
No. Do you want to hear that story?
Reed said she was concerned about overcrowding in Harrisonburg High School and began attending city council meetings.
And I was sitting there one night, and I was listening. And it just dawned on me, I was them women up there, right?
She found out that with only a handful of exceptions, Harrisonburg City Council members have always been white men.
Harrisonburg is a very diverse community, but the leadership wasn't diverse. So I went out and tried to find a woman to run.
That woman turned out to be herself.
I mean, I'm not trying to say anything, but, you know, it's time to have women in these leadership roles, right? Because at 52,000 people in population, you know, women are over 50%. Of that population, right? We are more than men. So our voices are important and needed to be heard. And just having three women over, you know, that's not acceptable. So I kind of wanted to break that glass ceiling.
And again, she points back to the women who shaped her.
I remember they would always make us, and I said make, they would always make us speak at church. Even when we were young, you know, I'm talking about, you know, 10 or 11, 12. I remember this vividly, you know, stand up in front of people and we either had to quote scripture or read something. And I hated that because I was unsure, I was uncomfortable. And then I remember standing over here at the council chambers and delivering my caucus speech. And it was so clear to me, I was being prepared by them ladies. for that moment.
She also points to the girls she mentors. She said some were at that caucus speech.
It was like, now these girls can see themselves in this role.
With that history, her foundation, and a city council term only begun, Reed also has an eye on a personal goal, completing her education degree.
I decided probably about 5 years ago, I said, you know, I'm going to go ahead and finish this. I need to finish this. So I've been working on it, but I got to get through this one class, and the one class is math. Okay.
And you're looking out the window. All out the room. Like, is there anything else we can talk about?
But I'm going to do it.
You're going to do it.
I'm going to do it. Yes. Mm-hmm.
For WMRA News, I'm Christopher Clymer-Kurtz.
Any item placed on the consent agenda will be removed and taken
okay,
up.
Okay, so far we've met women in the ministry and in politics, now to the field of healthcare, and a sector of that field that has had to fight for some respect in recent decades. Midwives have delivered babies for centuries, but in America they mostly went underground as childbirth became medicalized in the 20th century. So, like many other midwives these days, Misty Ward, owner and founder of Brookhaven Women's Health and Natural Birthing Center outside Harrisonburg, is a bit of a rebel, part of a growing movement to demedicalize childbirth. WMRA's Jessie Nadler has her profile.
What you're hearing right now is the sound of childbirth moments after delivery at Brookhaven Natural Birthing Center just outside Harrisonburg. The mom delivered her baby, her third child, in a water bath. If the room sounds raucous, that's because it is. 10 people, not including Brookhaven staff, attended this birth. Grandmas, big brothers, children. The parents call their two older children over to the bathtub to introduce them to the newest member of the family.
Come say what it, come say what it is.
Daddy's okay, gonna uncover and you and Roman are gonna say what it is. It's a girl! It's a girl!
A birth is by definition a lively event, and Brookhaven founder and owner, midwife Misty Ward, she actually caught this baby as it came out, likes to retain as much of that rough and tumble joy as possible.
What are the, I guess the birth center philosophy is it's not a mini hospital, it's a maxi house.
Births aren't supposed to be clinical around here. Moms can invite their entire extended families into the birthing suites with them if they want. They want to eat a ham sandwich? Go ahead. The fully stocked kitchen at the heart of Brookhaven is specifically for laboring moms and their families.
So we have grandmas in here baking birthday cakes for the baby. Sometimes we have dads. I mean, we've had a guy make steak for all of our staff. That was a really good one.
The idea behind midwife-led maternity care is that women do better when they're able to deliver in a natural, home-like setting at their own pace, often in a water bath. And research seems to back this up. Doctors in the United Kingdom recommend that healthy women with low-risk pregnancies are actually better off staying out of the hospital. It results in lower rates of interventions, from cesareans to episiotomies. This is totally anathema in the United States, where the vast majority of women have hospital births. 60% have an epidural. 32% are cesarean deliveries, more than double the World Health Organization's target of 10 to 15%. The whole experience is invasive and sped up, says Ward.
Women are created to do this, and they can do it with the right support. And I just feel like the hospital's failing them in supporting them through a natural process. It's a lot of the things that happen to women in a hospital that creates the need for the epidural.
Ward is part of a growing minority who think women are better off going au naturel. Around 9% of all births in the U.S. are led by midwives, up from about 3% in years past. When she first opened in 2010, she was delivering 40 babies a year. Now she's up to 100. More hospitals have linked up with midwives to meet the growing demand, but Brookhaven is still the only public freestanding natural birthing center in the area. She recently celebrated her 500th natural delivery.
Witnessing a baby come out of a woman. I mean, honestly, the fact that it fit, the fact that it worked, the fact that she was alive when it was all over. Like, honestly, it's amazing that our bodies can create another human being. And even now, 500 plus births into it and gone through the process myself, I'm still just in awe of like what women's bodies can do. We make people.
Midwifery was the standard for delivering babies throughout history and one of the few occupations open to women. But in the United States, the practice was pushed underground and demonized as unsafe and backward as the medicalization of childbirth took over. By 1950, almost all U.S. babies were delivered by doctors, male doctors, in a hospital. Midwifery didn't go anywhere. It was just illegal. So it tended to draw women like Ward, who had a bit of a rebel spirit. It wasn't until 2006 that midwifery in Virginia became legal again.
I kind of wanted to call the shots, and I didn't want to be employed by someone else. You know, I wanted to own my own business. I'm just really motivated in that way.
But not everyone in the community was so enthusiastic. When Ward went before the County Board of Supervisors in 2010 to apply for a zoning permit to open her business, she was reminded again that the medical establishment still had issues with her profession.
Then the board said, "Is there anyone here who opposes this?" And all of a sudden I heard, "I do, I do, I do, I do."
Four medical professionals associated with Rockingham Memorial Hospital got up to voice their objections. Ward, ever the fighter, reminded the board that she was licensed by the Virginia Board of Medicine to practice anywhere in the state. If they didn't give her the permit, she'd just open in another location.
Then they were all like, "Oh, good point. We can't stop you from practicing."
They realized it was a turf war and gave her the permit. And after a few bumps, she says she now has a great working relationship with the hospital, which leads to one of the biggest misconceptions about a natural birthing center.
"We're not going to handcuff you to the bed and say you have to do this without drugs here, bite this stick. You know, if women want to have an epidural, we'll take them to the hospital, you know."
10% of her laboring clients end up doing exactly that. And for the record, she's not anti-epidural at all. She just thinks they're overused.
Our Women of Interest series would not be complete without this final profile of Joyce Herndon, who is a one-of-a-kind bookkeeper for the Stanton Union Stockyards. As Jesse discovered, Herndon is all about vitality, longevity, and the value of hard work.
Joyce Herndon has been working full-time at the Stanton Union Stockyard since 1991.
I'm the secretary, bookkeeper, accounts receivable, accounts payable, do most everything.
On sale days, farmers from all over the Shenandoah Valley bring in their cattle for auction. It could be from 500 to 1,500 cows for sale at a time. She and the other ladies in the office stay until every last cow is paid for and processed. That can take until 7 p.m., 9 p.m., 1 a.m. The latest she stayed is 4 o'clock the following afternoon. So Joyce Herndon has some stamina, but there's something else you should know about her.
I'm 82.
Yeah, she's 82. How many 82-year-olds do you know who can pull the rare all-nighter?
I've done it so long that I reckon I'm used to it. I think your body gets immune or whatever.
I couldn't do that.
That's what my daughter says.
How do you do it?
I don't know. They don't know how I do it. They said, "How do you do it?" I said, "Well, I don't know. We just do it."
It helps that Herndon really likes her job. Getting up and going to work every day, even on those brutal sale days, is not a burden.
I don't feel 82. I don't feel like my mind's 82. I still feel like my mind's 40. I love working on books, bookkeeping, and talking on the telephone, talking with the people, and joking. And
she also really likes her bosses, two brothers also in their 80s. They're the ones who persuaded her to stay on when she first considered retirement at age 65.
They didn't want me to quit, and I really didn't want to quit. And I thought, well, maybe if I work till I'm 70, and I got to be 70, and I still liked it, and I was still active, and I felt like my mind was good. So I thought, well, I'll work till I'm 75. And it just kept going on like that. Now here I am, 82.
In fact, the joke around the office is that Herndon may never retire. Voluntarily.
They said, well, they were going to build my coffin for me, and when I died, they'd carry me out in the coffin. They kid me about that all the time.
She thinks that the work itself, bookkeeping, working with numbers all day, keeps her mind sharp and stimulated. Bookkeeping, she says, can sometimes be like a puzzle.
When you can't find something in your bookkeeping and you know it's right there, as I used to tell the other girls, it's in there. It's in there somewhere. All of a sudden, there it is. Wonderful. We're back to zero again.
So she's got a great attitude. Her mind is sharp. She's surrounded by longtime friends and colleagues. All of this is key for maintaining vitality. But there are a few conditions that have made it possible for her to keep working into her ninth decade. Number one, it's a desk job. She's not on her feet all day. And number two, the stockyard doesn't do computers.
I don't know how to use one, and I don't want to learn at 82. When people come in and ask us to look up something, sometimes we have it in 5 minutes. They'll say, well, that was fast.
Herndon's husband passed away after 55 years of marriage in 2009. They had 3 children, 5 grandchildren, and now she has 6 great-grandchildren.
I just feel like I'm so lucky to have found this job, and it was what I wanted, actually, because I grew up on a farm, and I loved the farm. And when I found this job, I thought, oh, I just love it, being around the farmers and hear the farm talk like I did growing up. And that's another reason why I don't want to quit. I'm just so attached.
Work feels like home. How many people can say that?
I have no regrets. And if I had it do over again, I believe I'd do it the same thing. I'd work as long as I could.
And that's no bull. For WMRA News, I'm Jesse Nadler.
You can find all the profiles in our Women of Interest series at WMRA.org. And thanks to F&M Bank, a local independent community bank since 1908, with locations throughout the Shenandoah Valley, for supporting that series. All our stories are archived at WMRA.org. If you'd like to support our ability to produce them, go to that website, mouse over News, then click on News and Information Fund. Be sure to click like on Facebook at WMRA Public Radio and follow me on Twitter at WMRA News to get the latest on our coverage. And to keep up with local and statewide news each day with WMRA, including the latest on this year's General Assembly session, subscribe to our daily news podcast, the WMRA Daily. Get a news update on your smartphone every weekday morning. Find out how at WMRA.org. I'm Bob Levicki, WMRA's news director and morning edition host. I'll talk to you in the morning. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.